without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm usually joined by my lovely co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. Kathleen is on vacation this week and will be back next week, so tonight you're stuck with me, and I thought we would review some of the issues that we have discussed over the past 3 months and try to get some feedback from our audience. So please call in, because if you don't call in, Kathleen will assume that I can't do it on my own, and she'll just be impossible to live with. You notice that I threw in the lovely Kathleen Gomez, just in case she's out there listening. But before we start, I think we need to talk about the issue of the day, and that is the not guilty verdict in the George Zimmerman trial in Florida. As I'm sure you are aware, George Zimmerman, who was accused of murdering an unarmed teenager named Trayvon Martin, was acquitted on all charges yesterday by a jury in Florida where the incident took place. There have been demonstrations in response to this verdict, including here in Washington, D.C. In response, the president has said that we are a nation of laws and that a jury has spoken, and now is the time for reflection. I must tell you, I agree with the president. However, as I reflect, I can't help but thinking about a man accused of murder who was formerly accused of domestic violence, sexual abuse, racism, and assault on a police officer. A vigilante who profiled a child, followed him, confronted him against the orders of the local authority, killed him, and now walks free. It is hard for me to reconcile this with my belief in democracy and freedom in America. I think it is a sad day for all of us, and I want to know what you think. So if you're out there and you agree or you disagree, please call in, because I feel we need to talk about this as a nation. That is part of being reflective, and it is certainly part of the healing that needs to go on here. The number is 888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471. Let's talk. I've tried to reconcile this whole idea of Trayvon Martin, and it's been very hard for me. Well, before I go on, I see we have Raymond from Maryland on line one. So let's talk to Raymond. Raymond, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Great.
I'm in the state of Maryland, and I've been a lifelong Maryland resident. I'm a Marine Corps veteran, and I disagree with the verdict that took place. But, you know, I think it's ironic that you have the President of the United States who said that, you know, we're a nation of laws, and that, you know, the verdict has been rendered, and, you know, we should therefore, you know, just pretend act as though that's the end of it and all. And I think that's interesting that he should mention that we're a nation of laws when, in fact, the President of the United States himself refuses to follow the law. And I'm not a Democrat and I'm not a Republican. I'm an independent. Okay, but the President of the United States says we're a nation of laws, but at the same time, he won't enforce laws that affect the entire American people, body politics. This man says that we're a nation of love, but at the same time, he's open. He's an open borders advocate. He promotes open borders, illegal alien citizenship for all these illegals. The laws state otherwise. It is a felony according to the U.S. code to aid and abet an illegal alien, and yet the president says it's okay to give dreamers, by the stroke of his pen, which as though he has the authority, to give them legal status. Okay, but at the same time, he says we're a nation of laws, but at the same time, he will not deport the people, or even people who come through the system who committed crimes, even deport those people. You know, I think it's hypocrisy for the president to say we're a nation of laws in one instance, and at the same time, ignore the laws that are on the books as they are.
Well, first, before I even get started, Raymond, let me say thank you for your service as a member of the Marine Corps. I was trained as a child. I come from a family of veterans to always say thank you to veterans. So thank you. And as far as the DREAM Act goes, I know this has been very controversial in Maryland, but I think the president, as far as the DREAM Act goes, feels that we shouldn't penalize the children of people that may have come here and been undocumented. I mean, that's really a distinction we have to make in between illegal and undocumented, because with the exception of Native Americans and African Americans, we're all here. We all came for the same reason. African Americans were brought against their will, and Native Americans were here when we got here, but everybody else came across the border, came very often legally through my ancestors came through Ellis Island, but they all came here for the same reason, for a better life. And the DREAM Act recognizes that and tries not to penalize the children of aliens, keeping them from getting a decent education and being productive members of society. This is the only problem I have with immigration reform. The people that want to deport these people and call and not deal with the 11 million that are here undocumented, I just don't know what we do with them. We don't have the capability to deport that many people. What's your problem with all this, Raymond? Yeah, please.
Because I've been dealing with that issue for years in the state of Maryland. I used to work with the Maryland General Assembly. I was not assembly member, but I worked on the Senate side as a legislative advisor. Uh-huh. And I've seen this thing. I've been dealing with this thing for years. Yeah. And I've seen people make that argument and say, we can't punish the children for the sins of the parents. The children were brought over here through no fault of their own, so we can't punish the children for the sins of the parents. Well, to make that argument, we should make that argument. I don't hear people making that same argument for people who are drug dealers, who sell drugs, and who have children who have depended upon them. When the drug dealer is busted, he's in his house, and his house is busted. The first thing the authorities seek to do once a drug dealer is, and he's breaking the law, he's an American citizen. He's broken the law. First thing the government looks to do is to implement criminal forfeiture. They're going to take away his house. They're going to take away his car. Any assets he has is going to be seized by the government. And the purpose of criminal forfeiture is to not allow criminals to gain from illegal activity. Now, I don't hear people say anything about it. I mean, you have people who are selling drugs out in the community, and the children, when any time you bust a drug deal and you send them to jail and you see their assets, you see their car, you see their homes, children ultimately suffer. Children always suffer when people break the law.
Well, that's absolutely true.
They always suffer.
But correct me if I'm wrong. Once you forfeit the assets, you take away their house and their car and the other ways they benefit, you also take away their minor children. Their minor children are put into foster care. They don't allow the minor children to stay in the house. by themselves once they put them in jail. This is not. This is not a direct.
Yeah, if the children don't have another parent, or if the children don't have other family members that they go into public custody like that, if they have regular family members, they're turned over to family members who are responsible, who take over those kids. But those are just beside the point. The point is, those children are American citizens. These people that you're talking about are foreign nationals. They're
so
not
what
U.S.
would you
citizens.
Do? So what would you do in place of the DREAM Act? What would you do with these kids that want to go to college in America and improve their lives? Would you deport them?
Well,
I mean, that's my problem.
They said, well, we can't deport them. They said we can't deport 11 million. Where that 11 million, 12 million figure comes from is, you know, it's pulled right out of thin air, because there's no way to honestly determine exactly how many people. Back in 1986, when they did the original Amnesty Act and law, they said it would only affect 1 million people, and it turned out to be 3.5 million. So if they tell us it's 12 million, 11 million people now, you can best believe it's double or triple or more that many people are going to actually benefit and take advantage of this. Then these people are going to compete against American citizens. Why should we subsidize lawbreakers, people who are not even American citizens, to compete against our own children and families, okay, when these people are not even American citizens? They're not. As much as they say, well, they're just children, want to make them productive, these people should be back in their own country fighting those countries' better nations. They should be fighting them the same way we fought our American Revolution to make America better. They should be doing the same things in those other nations. Nations like Mexico. We can't trust Mexico. Mexico puts out a form, a book, that actually encourages their people to break our laws, how to come across the border, how to avoid U.S. U.S. law enforcement, what to do in case you are apprehended or caught by U.S. Law enforcement. They have a book on how to avoid and break our laws. So how can we trust Mexico or any other nation with aiding and helping us on this issue when it's in their better interest to continue to have their citizens here to sending remittances back to their nations, okay, at the expense of the American worker?
Well, first of all, I disagree with your characterization that these people are criminals. The children are not criminals any more than the children of drug dealers are criminals. You know, if you're dealing crack, I wouldn't. I want to see you off the street, and I want to see you in jail, but I don't want to see your kids there. So these people are not criminals, number one. And I also disagree with your characterization that they're taking jobs away from American citizens. They're not. People that are migrant farm workers, people in, you know, we've had agricultural interests in this country, small farmers, cattle ranchers, people come forward and say, without these people, our agricultural system will collapse. These people aren't taking your jobs. They're not taking my jobs. My kids don't want to pick fruit. My kids don't even want to work at a 7.
But you're talking about less than 1% of the illegal aliens actually go out in that field and are picking anything. Okay, so that's not even. When I talk about jobs, I'm talking about roofing. I'm talking about construction. I'm talking about restaurant, hospitality. I'm talking about businesses that the American people have traditionally done themselves, who are now on the outside looking in because all these illegal aliens who are being used by companies. And I'll give you an example of a company, since you say it doesn't exist. Miller and Long, the world's largest concrete company, an American company, has stated in its own trade, in a trade journal, that 87% of their workforce, and they're bragging about this, is Salvadorian. Okay? Now, I'm a black man. You can't tell me that if 87% of a workforce is one group and one group only throughout the entire company, you can't tell me that discrimination is not taking place. And they're foreign born. They even admitted in that trade journal that they took trips to Salvador years ago and established relationships with the Salvadoran government to have their people brought here and to use them as laborers.
Well, I'm not disagreeing.
You know, this, okay. And not to mention the fact when they say they create jobs,
how are you going to create jobs? If I'm an American contractor, and I do contracting work, I do roofing, I do painting, or these other trades, how in the world am I going to compete against someone who comes in the country legally, knows a trade, or who has picked up a trade from having seen it here or where the country came from? How am I going to compete against somebody who's make the average wage in Mexico is $5 for a 12-hour work day? When a person can come from Mexico, they can come here and work for $5 an hour under the table, and then send that money back. In Mexico, $5 an hour is good, really good. It's unheard of. But you can send that money, part of that money back, and live like a king. You help your family live much better back there. But then at the same time, you're undercutting the American workforce here, the wages of the Americans here. How in the world are Americans going to compete against somebody who's willing to work under the table for $5 an hour? Okay, as far as the other people working illegally, I'd have people. I'm a businessman. I'd have people come to a restaurant. I run restaurants. I'd have people come to a restaurant and ask me, "Mr. Raymond, I'm a hard worker. I want to work hard." Well, if you want to work hard, fine. I tell you what, I need you to fill out this application, and I need two forms of ID: driver's license, birth certificate, Social Security card, green card, passport. I need at least two of those. Okay? You don't have that, then I can't hire you. The same person who tell me they don't have that, and I require that, they come back an hour, 2 hours later with every bit of ID I need in pristine condition, brand spanking new. What am I dealing with? That's identity fraud. You're gonna have massive identity fraud, all sorts of fake we don't even know who these people are. You're going to trust Mexico to tell you that a felon is a felon and that we should trust them who they claim they are and involving themselves in this amnesty program?
Well, look, I mean, I think you're saying several things here. And one thing you're saying is that Miller and Long is your problem. It's not the Mexican taking the job or the El Salvadorian. It's Miller and Long. They're breaking the law. We should go after them. This shouldn't be allowed. But your enemy is not the El Salvadorian. Your enemy is the contractor that wants a competitive advantage against you, so he's going to hire people that he can hire for less money. And while on the same token, we've got these guys talking about making immigration tougher, we've got the same damn conservative people in Congress talking about getting rid of unions, getting rid of the apparatus that protects the American workers. So that's one thing. We've got people on both sides of the issue talking out of both sides of their mouth. And I think it's somewhat
on the union support. The unions support AFL-CIO. The unions support illegal alien rights and making these people citizenship. They're in bed with these same producers. This is a 21st century form of slavery. I, being an African-American, I recognize, and I'm a student of history, recognize history's lesson to us all, one of which is that you cannot have cheap, plentiful cheap slave labor and it be a benefit to this nation. If it had been up to many people, the Democratic Party, for example, had it been up to the Democratic Party, we would still, as a people, as Americans, we would still have slavery in this country.
That's
okay,
ridiculous.
The Democratic Party was the party of slavery. That's history. You can't
debate
that.
You want to talk about history, but you only want to talk about revisionist history. You say these people should go back to their country and fight like we did in the Revolution? Well, let me tell you a few things about the Revolution. First of all, we came over here, we rounded up all the damn people that had a right to be here, and we got rid of most of them, and the few that were left, we put on reservations. Then we went to Africa and took people from Africa, loaded them on ships, and brought them over here and made slaves out of them. That's the history. Thomas Jefferson,
let me just say this about what you just said. Okay. I don't acknowledge and accept that I don't include myself in we, I don't include good people, Americans of any kind in we. It was a certain group of people in that makeup of this earth, these earlier people who settled here, okay, who made up that they were slavers. They had a perverse mentality when it came to right and wrong, but that was not the purpose of America being established. Okay, America was not established based upon slavery. If it had, we would never have abolished slavery. We would never have had that battle between the framers on that issue of slavery. Okay,
look, the framers were slave owners. Thomas Jefferson owned slaves. He stood there and said,
that's
all
right.
Men are created equal. We hold these truths to
right.
be self-evident.
That's right.
But he was a slave owner, okay? So
he was a slave owner, but again, he fit into that category. But you can't make and say the whole America itself, it was the whole purpose of America coming together being established because it was to promote slavery.
I'm saying that America has always been what it is today, a door for people for a better life. That's what it was. That's what it is. That's what it was when the Irish came over here and the Italians and the Poles and the Germans and all the Eastern Europeans after the Second World War. That's what it was, and that's what it still is. But I agree with you about enforcing the laws, and I agree with you about border security, and I agree that we cannot take a willy-nilly attitude to this and just open the doors and say, anybody come on in and do whatever the hell you please. I agree with that. But I don't think...
But you're saying that, you agree, but you're not, but your rhetoric says that, look, we need to just be quiet on this issue, just accept these people. Look, they're here. They are contributing to our society. They give more than they take, which is an outright, flat-out lie, because in order to get what they get from this country, they have to take. They take it from somewhere. And it's not coming from out of thin air. It's coming off the backs of the American people. There's no way in the world you can tell me that somebody, an average immigrant, an illegal alien immigrant, the average immigrant coming into this country has less than a 10th grade education. Who are they competing with? They're not competing with me, but they're competing with our people, with our Americans, other American citizens who are at that level. Not only that, then they're bringing in people who are, they say, highly skilled, these computer people. You know, we don't have enough trained people to take these jobs or to work these jobs. People come to America to learn, to be educated. We have the finest educational system in the entire
world.
To make an argument to say that, well, you know, we don't have people trained to do this, that's utterly preposterous. We have the universities where people knock themselves out to come here. Many people come here, they overstay their visas so much so that they don't want to go back. Okay? So how in the world can the president make an argument and say, well, you know what, we have all these high-tech jobs, high-tech opportunities, but no one is able to fill them because Americans are not up to the learning curve in order to take these, to have these jobs.
What he's advocating is
a Marshall Plan for the American people where you say, look, we're going to provide, we need nurses, we need this. I have a nephew that just graduated from law. I'll give you an example, my own family.
Mm-hmm.
I have a nephew that graduated from law school, okay, recently, within last year. Okay, my nephew went to undergrad. When he was an undergrad, my nephew was studying computer science.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
He
told me at one point as an undergrad, he said, you know, Uncle Ray, I can't stay in computer science because there's no money in computer science. Computer science used to pay very, very well. Computer science is no longer the type of position, type of work where you can make, come out of college and make $80,000 or so a year. Okay, now it's a fraction of that. Okay, those many of those H-1Bs, these visas that they're talking about, we need. These are people who are no more educated than the American people who are already here, but they're not going to get those jobs because those jobs are going to people outside of this nation who ought not to have that opportunity. Jobs in America ought to be for Americans first.
This guy that you've got over in the Soviet Union right now, who has given out all sorts of government secrets, had a 10th grade education, and he was hired by our government, by the CIA because they can't find enough qualified people to take those jobs. They only filled when the accounting firm, and I'm sorry, I can't remember what accounting firm got him the job.
I thought it was Booz and Hamilton. I thought that
right,
was
Booz and Hamilton, right. They said that only 10% of their jobs were filled. They only could fill 10% of their jobs. So there is a problem with that, you know? But I got to tell you, I feel your pain. I mean, if you're out there competing with these guys, I understand that. And I understand why people get upset about this. But this is a complex problem, and my opinion, and that's all that it is that we can't throw the baby out with the bathwater, and that's what we do if we say to 11 million people, you gotta leave. People that have worked hard and been in this country for a long time. But I think you bring up some very important issues, and I think it's a very, very complex problem. We did a show recently on border security. You know, border security is increased by like 90, they're catching 90% more people than they've ever caught before, but still people are getting in. So there's still more that has to be done. But we're working in a positive direction
on
that.
On that border security, what you just said was, is not true. Because the Obama administration is using people that they catch at the border at that moment and turn them around. They're including them in the deportation numbers. So, you know, let's be straightforward and honest about this.
Well, they're deporting them if they're sent them out of the
country.
They're
manipulating statistics.
Well, both sides
Janet
do
Reno,
that.
I'm sorry. The Homeland Security, Napolitano. This woman told ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, and the Border Patrol. She told Border Patrol that, ICE, that they are no longer. This is a directive from the head of the Homeland Security. She said, "You are no longer chartered and given the green light from federal government to provide interpretation services to local law enforcement when they have issues of immigration questions." Okay? Now, what kind of a... They say the main purpose of the presidency and in his cabinet is the protection of the American people.
Yes,
who
it is.
Who in their right mind would say something like that unless they don't care? These people obviously have no concern whatsoever with United States security within this country. When you tell the Border Patrol and you tell ICE that you're no longer capable, we will not allow you under our authority to integrate your experience and to work with local law enforcement when they have a problem with language.
Well, you know, let me tell you, look, that's a problem across the board, and it's a problem in Arizona. You saw that the Supreme Court just struck down their voter ID law in Arizona because this is a problem with localities. And we started out today talking about Trayvon Martin, and I think that what happened in that case in Florida and in other jurisdictions, it wouldn't have happened. The verdict would have been different. So you can't, the federal government cannot succumb to the pressure of localities. That's just part of making America what it is today. And look, I've got another caller on the line, but let me just say one last thing to you, Raymond.
And protect federal law. Here's an example. If I go and rob a bank, okay, if I rob a bank, before I get out of the area, if I can get out of the bank, there is a call, an alarm going out to the local, to the authorities. The police are going to scramble units to that location. In fact, I've seen an armed robbery. Okay, the police responded to that bank before the FBI. Now, armed robbery, bank robbery, is a federal offense, and yet the local law enforcement is involved in enforcing the law. They don't say, well, you know, we can't respond to that because that's a federal offense. We'll wait for the FBI to get in there, and that's their jurisdiction. We're just going to – no.
The FBI, and we got to end this because we got another caller. But if the FBI, if the local authorities profile you because you're an African American and they violate your civil rights and they arrest you on the basis of your color, then yes, the federal government can intercede and say that the state government doesn't have the authority to do that, regardless of what their local regulations are. So that's an important concept. Well, but let me say to you, Raymond, let me just say that I appreciate you calling in. I think you have some really good points to make. But we need to get another caller in. So I hope you'll call back again. We're going to do this issue, several more times. We've had a mayor from a border town talk about border security and some other things. So in a few weeks, we're going to talk about this again. And I hope you'll continue to listen. And I hope you'll call back in. Thank you. Now we have Taboo from Washington.
Hi, Taboo, how are you
there? I'm good.
Yes, I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you okay. Can you hear me?
Well, thank you. Let me say first to you, I couldn't make it last week. I didn't get back in town in time for the testimony. Okay. I hope all went well.
Yes, it did. And we're going to talk about that in a second if we have time. But you know what? I'd rather talk to you guys than recap what we've done. But we're going to talk a little bit about that in a minute if we can.
Good.
So
I'd like to comment, if I could, about something you said thus far.
Yeah.
You started off when you mentioned what President Obama had said. About we're a nation of laws.
Yes.
You know, and I'd like to ask him and thank him for focusing it on. And your last caller seemed to touch on that too. But he's saying one thing. He's saying he's a nation of laws at one point, and then he's another point. You hear him say we're a nation of immigrants. Well, and you mentioned also that your parents came through Ellis Island, right?
Yes, they did. My grandparents on my mother's side. Yes.
Okay. Right. Well, Ellis Island opened what, 1892 or somewhere?
Yes, I'll take your word for that. I don't know for sure,
I think when it opened.
Yes. I'm having a hard time hearing you, Taboo.
Yeah. You having a hard time hearing me?
No, no, you're okay now. Okay.
Okay. Just had a little, let's think about something. 1892. Yes. Now, I'm wondering who cares about the American people with dark skin, like Trayvon's. Now, we talk about the illegal immigrants that you were speaking of, and I do say illegal because they break the law, and I don't use the term undocumented because documents – you have to have documents. They have forged documents, you know. Mm-hmm. And anyone who has forged documents, you know, I mean, that's a felony. So people cannot exist in this society without having some form of documentation. So the point I wanted to make is American blacks who are descendants of Native Americans who are here. We got Native American in us. We got the African in us and the white. We are mixed people. Now, we built the country. We did not come here.
That's right.
We built it, and our people have been here all along.
That's right.
So we have been here. So the question is, people are concerned about the illegal immigrants' children. Well, what about American black children?
Well, we're
can
concerned.
Can we get some sympathy from America for reparations so we can stop and alleviate a lot of the problems? What about a homeland for our people?
Well, you know, first of all, homeland for your people was suggested, and it was created, and it's really not a good idea. You're Americans. This is your homeland. You don't need another homeland.
Well, we're not treated that way. We've been deported and everything, as you know so well. If you look at even when Emancipation Day, 1862, when they released the slaves, enslaved people, I should say, they tried to get be able to get rid of us. You know, and
They tried to send you to a homeland, send you to Liberia, and some of them went.
And other places. Right.
Yes, and other places.
So the question is.
I'm sorry, Taboo. We're not hearing you.
Okay.
I got you now.
Can you hear me?
Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. The bottom line that we want to get back on is, who cares about American black children? We care about other people who come here. Oh, don't separate their families or their children. They came. Well, parents are responsible for the children. If they are when they're young people. They are dependents.
Yes.
Then they are they take the status of the parents. You see. So the question is, and part of this, well, I guess that's my question. Should we not care for American black children?
Of course
before
we should.
Care for American children before we care for anybody else's. You got many American children, white and all the rest.
Of course we do. And, you know, the Supreme Court just upheld a ruling taboo that you can have affirmative action. And affirmative action was an idea that came into place so we could care for black children. Now, have we done a good job at caring for black children? Since blacks make up a disproportionate amount of people in our prisons, since blacks make up a disproportionate amount of poor people in America, since blacks make up a disproportionate amount of less educated people in America, you can argue that we haven't done a very good job at it. But I don't think you can argue that we haven't tried. We certainly have, and we need to continue to try to do that because we need to make sure, I agree with you, that at some point, hopefully in the near future, we have equality. Now, you and I both know that that's what we fight for here in Washington. That's my job, is to get equality for the people of the District of Columbia, and I agree with you 100% taboo that African American children, just like white children and other children, need to be taken care of. But I believe the operative word is children, and that's why I care about affirmative action, and that's why I care about the DREAM Act. We're going to take a little break now and give a few other people a chance to call, and we're going to play a song. You know, we always do this when we take a break, and I try to think of the appropriate song to play today, and this song just kept on coming. I tried to think of something hipper and something newer, but since I seem to have so many questions about Trayvon Martin and so few answers, I thought this was the appropriate song. So here's an oldie but a good goodie. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back. And before we take another caller, let me just go over a few things that have happened lately on my most pressing issue, which is the issue of statehood for the District of Columbia. I just want to give you an update because really one of the primary reasons for this show is to make America understand that we're not equal in the District of Columbia and that we're working hard to bring equality through statehood to the district. So there have been a few developments lately. Our statehood bill now has 10 co-sponsors in the Senate and 51 co-sponsors in the House, and we're very excited about that. We've gotten the leader of the Senate to be a co-sponsor. And as a consequence of Senator Reid from Nevada's sponsorship, two other senators have signed on, Bernie Sanders of Vermont and Cowan of Massachusetts. So we're excited about that. But meanwhile, I should point out that Puerto Rico has a statehood bill in, and they have 89 co-sponsors, even though their bill has only been out there for a few weeks. One of the main differences and one of the main reasons for that is that Puerto Rico spends money on their effort. And in that regard, the D.C. City Council this week held a hearing on Bill B-20-171 to invest $1.1 million in our effort to become the 51st state, and we're very excited about that. This would be the first time that our delegation got funding from the city, and that would just be huge for us. We had 24 witnesses who testified, all in favor of giving us money, although there were a few, there's some tweaking that needs to go on, but we're very excited at the prospect of getting funding. And also, for the first time last month, we have a statue of Frederick Douglass that was put in Emancipation Hall in the Capitol to represent the contribution that Washingtonians have made to America. You may not know this, but in Statuary Hall in the Capitol, there are two statues for each state. And the District of Columbia has two statues that have been on hold for a very long time. Pierre L'Enfant, who was the man that designed the District of Columbia, or the nation's capital, and Frederick Douglass, who you probably know is a favorite son of our city, a great emancipator, and a statesman who believed in equality for everybody. So we're very excited about that, and kudos go out to our representative, Eleanor Holmes Norton, because she pushed the bill that made that happen. So now we're back, and let me we've got a caller on the line. Put him on. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, Taboo, you again. Okay, what's up?
Well, listen, not much. I apologize. I got cut off.
Oh, but, that's okay.
Thank you for that update. That's most important. But I always say statehood for who? Now, it's not for. This is a sovereign country. This is a, you know, this is not for illegal people. And I do use the term illegal. Now, you mentioned affirmative action. Now, yes, and you are 100% right, and I agree with you 100% about we've done a lot, we need to do more. But we must get clear that affirmative action is not reparations. Reparations,
well,
repair the damages is for what has already been done. And no one has ever made an attempt to repair the damages, not to even mention apologize when it happened. Yes, they stopped doing a certain act. We caught you with your cookie hand in the jar, you now take it out. But you see, under that, we brought in a lot of other people. You look at white females in particular. Matter of fact, we need to give kudos to the father of that affirmative action bill, who lives, a district resident, a black man,
yeah.
You know, in which many white females all came in under. So let's educate as we go. Yes, that was a good thing, but let's get a good understanding, make sure we understand that affirmative action is not reparation. So. But thank you for
Well, no,
answer.
I understand that. But let me ask you, when it goes to reparations, does it stand, does it stop at African Americans? What about Native Americans? You know, I work with Native Americans, Taboo, and I wear a T-shirt sometimes, which is an Apache band of Indians that says Homeland Security fighting terrorism since 1492. You know, to Native Americans, we're all foreigners.
Well, you know, they have gotten certain form of reparations. They got 56 million acres of land that's now recognized as that by the U.S. government. And I think my statistics not about to be right. They were given, various tribes were given various forms of millions of dollars. They have casinos, et cetera, that helps in there. But so they have some means. You can never be enough. You can never give enough for what has happened to them. But at least something has been done.
Well, first of all, they weren't given anything that they didn't have. I mean, you could say they were given 56 million acres of land. I think if I came to your farm and said, look, Taboo, you have this 10,000 acres, and we're going to let you keep 1,000 acres of the worst land, I don't think you'd think of that.
Listen, I'm agreeing with you. That's why I say it. But at least some agreements have happened, and they've at least talked about it. Haven't done that. But what you must remember is, American blacks, we're part Native American, too.
And
right. We've been
I don't disagree with you either. I just think that the problem of providing reparations – in form of, if you're talking about a cash payment, for example, that that opens a whole can of worms and that there are other people that could come to the table and demand the same thing. That's all I'm saying. Not that it wouldn't be a just thing to do. And I think we try to – affirmative action is really an attempt to pay reparations, to say
let's do a comparison of – let's talk about one thing. Let's talk about land. Okay, okay. Native American got some land. Why not award some land to American blacks? What about right here in the District of Columbia? The federal government still owns this land. Not separating, you know, not to take nothing from nobody. If, let's say, a house, you know? But these are the things we're talking about. Our people shouldn't have to pay any taxes. Hell, they already ours. You know? You got Mayor Barry ought to call in, and he should be for hounding him for tax money. Well, the federal government and everybody owns American blacks. You know?
Well, that's true, but you know, we pay Councilman Barry, who happens to be a friend of mine, $125,000 plus a year. He needs to pay taxes on that
not if the government owes him. If the government owes him, no, he shouldn't have to. I say, and nor neither. And when she went back years back, when she hadn't paid her, she should have stood up and said no. I think. You know, but I think it's something. I mean,
well, and you and I have no argument about, you know, if you stood up and said tomorrow, I live in the District of Columbia and I don't have the rights that other Americans have. I want to be treated like Puerto Rico or the other territories and not have to pay federal income tax. I support your right to do that, Tabu. I think that
that's on the
I'm sorry.
But that's in comparison with them, but Puerto Rico, because they are not a state. But I was speaking from the fact of what the federal government has done to us in the form of repairing the damages. That, you know, when you do harm to people, you have to make up. Japanese, for example, they were in turn. They got, $20,000 a person, I think. But it's not just a cash I'm looking for. It's not cash. Well, you know, they haven't even apologized.
Well, you know what? First of all, I was part of that bill. I did work for Congressman Matsui of California, who was one of the proponents of that bill. And by the time reparations were paid to Japanese Americans who were not discriminated against, but actually rounded up and put in concentration camps, there were very few of them left, Tabu. But
you're exactly right.
But as far as apologizing to African Americans, hell yeah, the government should say, I have no problem with that.
American blacks, because we're American, we were born here, and we have been for generations.
I understand. American blacks. Okay.
Thank you.
You know, it's hard to keep up with the taxonomy, you know, from, you know, when I was a kid, we called American blacks black, and now we call them African American, and you know, everybody tries to make an attempt to use the right language, but yes, that's what I mean.
I used to say that too, but for clarification, I think as we go and we evolve, I think that's a better description. And no offense at all, and you're right. Okay, so no problem. You're right.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think that there should be an official apology. But look at how far we've come lately. I got to tell you that I've been in national politics. I got my first job in national politics as a volunteer in 1979. And even when I worked for Bill Clinton in the 90s, if somebody had said to me that we'd have an American black president
he's African American.
Years later, he was born in the United States, Tabu. Hawaii is part of America, regardless.
Okay, thank you for the correction.
Yes. What? Regardless of what that jackass Donald Trump has to say, Hawaii is part of America. I've been there. Believe me, the thing you could do to insult a Hawaiian when they say where are you from is if you say I'm American. That's the first thing they say to you. I'm an American too. You need to say I'm from the mainland. But
I was joking now.
You know, it would have seemed like an impossibility. You know, probably one of the most wonderful things that I've gotten to do in my capacity as a senator for the District of Columbia, as you may know, I was involved in the dedication of the Martin Luther King Memorial. And I want to tell you, I went down there as an official representative for the city to greet people. And I saw people, it was so moving, because I saw people in their 70s who were freedom riders, who hadn't seen each other since the days that they marched together in places like Selma, come together in front of that monument and break down. And I can't tell you how many of them said to me, "We never, ever thought that we would see this day." And you know, this is probably a good note to end on. Next month will be the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, of which Dr. King's famous I Have a Dream speech was part. It was kind of the culmination of the event, although it was not the centerpiece of the event. The event was really a march on Washington and was put together by others. But
what was the march for?
It was for peace, jobs, and justice.
And justice for who? And the very same people who were marching, I don't think we had the immigration thing then. I don't think you had the Asians, the Latinos, and I'm not anti-anybody, don't get me wrong here.
Right.
But if you look, the very ethnic group who were marching for jobs on this very same 50th anniversary, this is the same group, their descendants, and some of these very same people are marching for the very same thing, and you have all these illegal immigrants and immigrants, not just all illegal, who are here, so who's doing the work? So the same people are still, 50 years later, asking for the same thing. Now,
well,
that's
absolutely... That's absolutely true. But don't forget there were a lot of white people in that crowd. And there's still white people
that
are fighting hard. I agree
with you. When I say American blacks are miscegenated people. That includes the white working people and the likes. Good example, what did John Adams call the Boston Massacre? Negroes, mulattoes, jack tars, and whatever he called them. So when we talk about American blacks, we are not excluding white people because they're part of our family too. It just so happens many of them don't want to include us. That's their choice, but we don't exclude them.
Well, that's the note on which we're going to finish the show today, Taboo. And so let's understand that we've come some part of the way. We still have a long way to go. Taboo points it out. Our other caller pointed it out. The terrible verdict for Trayvon Martin points it out too. So on
that
note,
thank you for your work, Senator Brown.
We'll end. Thank you, Taboo, and we hope to talk to you all next week. Thank you, and have a great week. And thanks for tuning in.
Give the people their right to vote.